Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
I have no illusions about what we're up against or how hard the task is in front of us, but I also have never seen the nation's conscience so shaken by what happened at Sandy Hook.
Vice President Biden, as reactions come in to the president's new actions on guns and the law just passed in Albany, we will tackle three aspects of the gun debate this hour. The mental health community's very different reactions to the Obama and the Cuomo initiatives, the politics of what Obama did yesterday, and reactions from gun owners and the big gun show in Las Vegas to the proposal to close the gun show loophole. There may actually be some emerging common ground, but it's not yet clear. First, we had a few therapists call in yesterday, and I would love to hear from some more of you today on the Obama or the Cuomo laws. Remember, the New York state law requires therapists to report to public health officials patients who they think are at a real risk of gun violence. Public health officials might then report it to law enforcement. A therapist named Val from Rego Park called in yesterday to object.
I don't think there's any patient who at some time during their therapy doesn't say, I would like to kill blank blank. That doesn't mean they're going to do it. And you have to be very careful not to get people in trouble who are just expressing a wish rather than the fact of actually doing it.
Indeed. But therapists, can't you tell casual venting on your couch from a menacing Jared Loughner? 212-433-WNYC. And I've read that therapists are already required under existing law to report patients they think are imminent threats. Is that the case? And tell us, if you're in the mental health field, what's your own policy about this? If you are a mental health professional who sees patients, and what's your own practice been? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Or you can post to our webpage at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehr Show for mental health professionals for these opening minutes. Another concern, knowing they might be reported, patients might choose not to disclose the most troubling thoughts that they should be able to talk about in therapy. Here's a caller from yesterday, Paul in Union.
I've been a legal gun owner for many years, and if I ever felt the need to see a mental health professional, I would not do it because I would not want to lose my freedom and I would not want to lose my right to own firearms. So these laws are a very bad idea. You dissuade people from seeking treatment.
Caller Paul in Union yesterday. And as for Governor Cuomo, who may be surprised to find himself the goat of the mental health industry, not just a hero to people who want to protect folks from guns, here is the governor responding.
It was a very complicated system to put together and a delicate balance to achieve. You want to protect the rights of mental health professionals, patients of mental health professionals, but at the same time, you want to have a system that also helps protect them. You know, if a person is a possible threat to themselves, then you don't want them to have a gun because they could possibly hurt themselves also, as well as others.
Governor Cuomo. So at the national level, it looks like the most controversial of President Obama's 23 executive orders are precisely the ones allowing doctors to ask their patients gun-related information, like they ask other questions for public health data collection, and the one that reinforces that doctors are allowed to report patients who they think are threats. So mental health professionals, what do you think of the Cuomo law or the Obama executive order? What's the buzz now among your colleagues? And what do you do? What's been your own practice in your own practice? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And as your calls are coming in, we welcome Michael Shearer from Time Magazine, author of a new cover story, The Gunfighters, Michael Bloomberg, Joe Biden, Gabrielle Giffords. Hi, Michael. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks again for having me, Brian.
Your Time Magazine CNN poll that accompanies this article found solid majorities for the most common gun control proposals, 56% for a ban on assault weapons, 58% for a ban on high-capacity magazines, and a whopping 69% for what the president didn't even propose, which is registration of all guns. Does that mean these things will get through Congress?
No, is the quick answer to that. To put those numbers in context, they're slightly lower than they were in the early 90s, the last time we had gun control legislation. The reason for that is the crime problem is not as big now, so the concern is not as great. But the issue in Congress is a partisan one. It's one in which Republicans have control of the House and have shown no interest in tackling these issues in the short term. And there's also an issue for moderate Democrats and moderate Republicans in that that same poll found that the likelihood that a voter is willing to vote on the issue of guns changes depending on their position on the gun issue. So, for instance, the Republicans, something like 22% say they're not willing to vote for a candidate who doesn't agree with them on guns. But among Democrats, it's only 14%. And historically, that intensity issue has been the thing that has kept members of Congress nervous about approaching guns. Lots of people support the idea of more regulations for guns, but when it comes to the voting booth, the people who tend to vote on the gun issue and cross party lines are the people who own guns and are worried about their guns being taken away.
And so to that point, the president tried in his announcement yesterday to really drive a wedge between Republican voters and their Republican members of Congress, and I guess kind of activate them on the issue. Right. Listen to this clip.
The only way we can change is if the American people demand it. And by the way, that doesn't just mean from certain parts of the country. We're going to need voices in those areas, in those congressional districts where the tradition of gun ownership is strong, to speak up and to say this is important.
And if that wasn't direct enough,
ask your member of Congress if they support universal background checks to keep guns out of the wrong hands. Ask them if they support renewing a ban on military-style assault weapons and high-capacity magazines. And if they say no, ask them why not. Ask them what's more important, doing whatever it takes to get an A grade from the gun lobby that funds their campaigns, or giving parents some peace of mind when they drop their child off for first grade.
So, Michael Shearer from Time, what's your political analysis of those statements?
I think those statements are actually the headline. The actual proposals he put out are not going to pass in the short term, but what the president's doing is really trying to seed a grassroots movement that'll be years in the making to change the whole physics of the gun issue in Washington and to really motivate people to, in the end, punish Republicans who are unwilling to move on some of this stuff. It's really a template for everything he's going to be doing this year. I mean, if you look at what he did last year with the debt ceiling in terms of trying to make this a public national campaign to put pressure on Republicans about high income taxes, you look at what's coming with immigration, you look, again, we're going to have these debates over raising the debt limit. He's playing an outside game, and he's saying to the American people, I don't have the power to do this, but collectively we can put enough pressure on Congress to force change. Right now, Republicans are meeting in a retreat. The House Republicans are meeting in a retreat and being briefed on their terrible poll numbers. Their poll numbers are worse now than they were 2 years ago, and there's a chance they get worse in the future, and that's really the leverage that the White House sees. And so I think this gun debate is really a nice template for the whole strategy of Obama in the first year of his second term.
So am I hearing you right that you're saying this is about more than these specific gun proposals? There's a larger, it's really a culture war assault on a wounded Republican Party that the president is using this for, correct?
Yeah, I don't know if it's culture, but it's definitely true that the thing the White House took out of the last election is, first, the demographics are on their side, that the country is shifting in their direction over the long term. So if they stick by their positions and maintain power, they're going to be more comfortable 4 years from now or 6 years from now.
And if the Republicans are discredited on immigration and now they're going to be discredited on guns, we're getting into the heart of culture war territory.
Yeah, we know that that's definitely true. And I think guns are a little more difficult issue than immigration is if you look at the polling. I mean, other things in our polls, that we put out yesterday showed that, you know, more people support the principles of the NRA than don't support the principles of the NRA. So even though those proposals for reform, for changing gun laws are pretty popular, it's also true that the NRA is not a hated institution. And the idea that gun ownership and the Second Amendment rights should be protected is also a very popular position.
Right.
So both sides do have some ammunition in this. But yeah, you're absolutely right that the White House feels like Republicans have sort of trapped themselves into ideologically inflexible positions that they now must be punished for. And the only way to punish them is to mobilize the American people.
And, of course, gays is another one. The consensus is that, you know, gay marriage is more and more accepted in this country. They used to say gays, guns, and God were the culture war 3 G's. Well, if on gays and at least some moderate amount of gun control and immigration, Republicans are starting to look like a discredited fringe organization, well, the new culture war is on and President Obama is not playing defense. There are two words, however, that very much complicate the ability to get all this through Congress, and the two words are Harry Reid, Senate Majority Leader, most powerful Democrat in Congress, campaigned for re-election on a pro-gun platform. Oh, look, endorsed by the NRA for re-election. So how fraught is the Harry Reid factor for the president's agenda?
I don't think Harry Reid actually has a lot of bad blood between him and the NRA. He's a pro-gun guy from a pro-gun state, and I think he's wary of, you know, the assault weapons ban. But I don't think he is the obstacle. I think what Harry's statements have been recently, he's basically come out and said that he doesn't think an assault weapons ban can pass the House, and by implication, it's not necessary that we put that vote to the Senate where it can hurt some of our members if it's not going anywhere. And he may be protecting himself, but I think he's also trying to protect some of his Western Democratic colleagues. If you force a vote in the Senate on something like the assault weapons ban for, you know, members in North Dakota or Montana, that could really hurt them in the next election. And if you know that issue is not going anywhere, I think Harry Reid's position is that that may not be necessary. The issue, though, is not just so Reid is not the obstacle. The obstacle is trying to convince people in those states that there is a reasonable middle ground here, and voting for, you know, banning the sale of AR-15s is not the same as coming for your guns. And that's where this discussion is, and that's what the president was talking about yesterday.
Let me take a call, and again, the call out is for mental health professionals. How do you react to the Cuomo law and to the Obama proposals? Catherine in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Thank you so much for calling in.
You're welcome. I'm a forensic psychiatrist, which means I work with issues around the law in psychiatry. And I just want to speak to the one portion of the law, because I haven't read it and I'm not completely familiar with it, but the idea of reporting a violent patient who is in possession of a gun, I think we already do that. And I'm glad that there's going to be somebody to call who might respond. I've had the experience of a suicidal patient who owned guns coming into the hospital, being discharged from the hospital, the staff being unable to get the guns out of the house because there is no rules about that, and the patient returns home and shoots himself in the head. So, you know, this element, we already report, but we have no one to call. So I think that that's a very good idea. I don't know about the rest of it, and I can't comment on it. The privacy of, you know, publishing some people's names who own a gun.
Well, that's a whole other,
that's
a separate conversation. But so do you think that this conversation that we've been having here and others have been having, this pushback against the new New York State law, is a red herring because the requirement to report people who are threats already exists?
Well, in my mind, it already exists, but I don't always have somebody to call who takes me seriously or who has any reason to do what I want them to do. In other words, if I call and if I call the police and I say this patient is dangerous and they have a gun, they might bring them to the hospital, but there's no way to get the gun out of the house.
Out of the house. And are you afraid that all the publicity around this is just going to dissuade precisely those patients from even seeking treatment?
You know, it's a question. It's definitely a question, but I don't know. I mean, it's a very good question.
Right.
On the other hand, these patients present to treatment, you know, the very psychotic ones, the suicidal patient is somewhat different than the homicidal patient.
Right.
There is a difference there. And if we're looking to pick up on people who might be killing other people more in a psychotic state, which is, I think, what, some of these people are, and, mm-hmm. Of course, the mental health profession is very upset that this then casts, a reputation on mentally ill people that they're all
right.
homicidal, which is not
right.
at all true.
A broad brush stigma. Nobody wants that.
Right. That's not a good element. But, often these people present to treatment not on their own.
Right. I understand. They're sometimes referred by the court, and that's how they might wind up with somebody like you, a forensic psychiatrist. That's really informative, Catherine. Thank you very much for calling in. And Michael Shearer from Time, I don't know if you're expert enough in this particular area to answer this question as you report on the gun debate in Washington, but the Atlantic has a piece this morning that says, those freaking out about Obama's executive order allowing doctors to report patients who seem like imminent threats should know that it doesn't give doctors any new rights to report credible threats of violence, nor does it create new requirements for them. Doctors have been expected to report potentially violent patients to law enforcement going back to 1976 when the Supreme Court of California decided that physicians have a legal obligation to break confidentiality when patients outline specific threats against specific parties. So have you been reporting on this at all yesterday since that executive order came out? Because I think, if you go to Drudge and you go to all these other sites, this is the biggest thing that people on the right seem to be upset about the president for.
Yeah, I think that's right. I haven't spent a lot of time in the mental health area, but I know when the White House announced this yesterday, those executive orders were described as clarifications, not changes. So
yes.
they were clarifying the Affordable Care Act, for instance, does not prohibit doctors from asking their patients about guns, or clarifying that health care providers can go to law enforcement when they're concerned. I think really what this is about, for the most part, is an education campaign, and it's not just happening from the White House. I've talked to law enforcement groups who are working now to educate police departments across the country in new practices that would, if you go to a house, you have a mentally disturbed person, you can offer to take their guns and hold them at the police department. Lots of police departments do this. They'll say, would you like me to take your gun? We can keep them in a safe at the police department, and we'll give them back to you later. Often, the mother or the wife or the husband of the mentally disturbed person will be more comfortable not having guns in the house. Or telling police departments also that if, they respond to a disturbance in which mental health is an issue, to make sure that there are gun locks and that the guns in the house are properly secured, and then to provide them. And so a lot of this, it's not really legal changes as much as sort of raising awareness among law enforcement and among the medical community that they have a responsibility to keep an eye out to see what they can do if it looks like some of these issues could be arising.
And we may get more clarification on this from our next caller, Bill in Forest Hills, who says he's a retired judge. Bill, thank you so much for calling in.
Sure, thank you. I welcome a chance to just say a word or two. Look, there have always been limits on privileged communications. Not all communications are privileged, and not all communications with a psychotherapist or with a lawyer or with a spouse are confidential. It seems to me, isn't the problem to some extent alleviated by making it crystal clear to every new patient, look, here are the limits. If in the course of this treatment I perceive a threat toward a third person or that you have a weapon, if I'm in doubt about it, I'm going to report it. The confidentiality will not extend to that point. Does that may change the potential for the psychotherapy relationship, but doesn't it handle the ethical problem, just putting it right up front to the patient, mm-hmm. telling the patient right up front, these are the limits?
So from your understanding as a judge of that, is there anything new in the new New York State gun law?
Well, I mean, I don't profess to know its details. It's long, and I'm trying to fathom them right now. But I would simply state that not all limits on confidentiality have the same implications. The question is partly what kind of psychotherapy relationship do you want to have between someone trying to help another person who's very upset? Do you want to let it be very, very expansive? The analogy is to the legal thing. I mean, you can have zealous representation, but it has limits. Lynn Stewart went to jail for allegedly violating an administrative order in the Sheik case that you shouldn't do certain things for your client. You can't just do anything that the client would do for themselves. And so there are limits. Now, whether this limit is a good limit or not, that remains to be seen. Mm-hmm. Is it going to take right. the guts out of good psychotherapy?
And actually, one thing that definitely is new in this law is that if you are deemed to be a threat, then you could have your gun permit revoked by the state. That was not in the law previously. But then somebody might wind up coming before somebody like yourself or another judge and wind up what? Arguing, well, this person really is a big enough threat to have their gun permit revoked. And that person's lawyer would say, no, they've had some hard times, but they're not an imminent threat. Judge, don't take away their gun permit. Is that what this is going to wind up in?
In the culture of New York, most of the time, the person with the gun is going to lose the gun. A lot depends on the culture of the community. But New York is very hostile to guns. It's an urban community. It doesn't have that frontier tradition. And I think that as an empirical matter, and this is anecdotal evidence at this point, I think that most of the time, the judge is going to stand with the taking away of the gun.
It's been an honor. Your Honor, thank you for shedding more light on this.
Thanks so much.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. We'll continue in a minute. Brian Lehrer on WNYC with Michael Shearer from Time, reporting on President Obama's gun control proposals and executive orders, and your calls from mental health professionals and other physicians. And we just heard from a judge. That was a great call on some of the new things in Governor Cuomo's new New York State gun law and its requirements that some of the mental health field are finding onerous. And Cynthia in Fanwood, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, thanks. Thanks for taking my call.
So tell us your situation. You're a psychotherapist.
Yes, I'm a psychotherapist, and I work in the child welfare system. I get referrals from children who might be having difficulties in schools, and I do in-home therapy with them.
Mm-hmm.
I see a number of children who may have been asked to leave school because they have problems relating to other children. They may have had issues with being hospitalized for suicidality or homicidal ideation and homicidal threats. I've dealt with kids who threaten to bring bombs to school, all kinds of violent type behaviors. In my work, I get concerned because those services in New Jersey have been limited this past year under some of the new rules under Governor Christie. I feel so strongly that these services should never be limited for just the same kind of reason of the incident that happened in Connecticut.
So this is about access and funding?
Yeah, it is. So that's one piece of it. The other piece is how I kind of assess kids for safety and talk about what's going on in the home. And that's something that once I do get in, and I'm working with children now, I always ask people and I observe the surroundings. Having a therapist in the home is so valuable.
Yes.
Because you won't know things like if the dad's a hunter, for instance, and the kid does have access to firearms, or there's bows and arrows, or there's knives or whatever.
Well, what would you do about that? I mean, you know, a lot of people listening right now who are responsible gun owners are going to hear this and say, well, what business is it of my child's therapist if I own a gun, or bows and arrows for that matter, if I'm a hunter, if mm-hmm. I'm not irresponsibly putting those things into the hands of my child?
Okay. Well, one of the things I talk about, because sometimes people actually teach their kids to go hunting, And when I have a child who has difficulty differentiating reality from fantasy, and they might have some delusional thinking going on, that's something that I'm going to address pretty directly and make a safety plan with the family. One of the things I'm going to do is help the family identify that that is an issue for this particular child. Because, look, if you have a kid who is a typical 13-year-old and you're teaching him how to go deer hunting with you, that's not the issue. We're talking about kids who might be threatening to kill other kids at school, or they're threatening to kill themselves.
I realize you're a child psychologist. Have you ever reported anybody as an imminent threat?
Absolutely.
To whom do you actually report?
Well, I work with a team. I'm going to be working with people from DIFAS. I'm going to be working with the school, or at least having contact with the school. I'm being dispatched from an agency that has a case manager, so I'm communicating regularly with that case manager. And at different times when I've been working with different teenagers and different kids, I've actually called 911. If I felt that there was real and imminent danger, I haven't hesitated.
Cynthia, thank you so much for your call. I really appreciate it. And Dan in Bridgewater, you're on WNYC. Hi, Dan.
Yes, I want to point out the problem for the primary care physician, who is the one who is actually seeing most of these problems. And most of the insurance plans want that primary care physician to solve the problem with some medication, which he only knows of from some drug salesman. Now, if you really look at how many people can do damage to themselves and others with Bushmaster guns, the number is tremendous. And it doesn't have to be a psychotic, and it doesn't have to be, it could be all sorts of other categories that I don't want to go into now because of the controversy that would it involve. But the point is, you can't treat those people like witches and have Salem witch trial-like sessions in their doctor's office.
Right. So what do you
do? So what you would then do is you would just remove the Bushwhacker gun. Because you don't want these people to be always suspect because their primary care physician cannot do a proper diagnosis, cannot predict, will take the road to safety on the basis of his liability, and you're going to have a lot of people who are going to be suffering some really bad records that will damage them further down the road.
Yeah, that's interesting. And Michael Shearer from Time, that's one of the gun rights advocates' positions, is that doctors are going to practice defensive medicine. They don't want to get sued, so they're going to err on the side of reporting people who maybe are risks. And a lot of people are going to have their weapons confiscated in New York State, where it's not really warranted.
Yeah, I mean, it's clearly a balance. There's no bright lines in any of this. One thing I would mention, though, is that one of the big parts of the president's plan announced yesterday was a substantial increase in money to train teachers about identifying mental illness, to reach out to young people who have potential mental illness problems. They're going to train more than 5,000, if they get funding for this, additional mental health professionals to serve students and young adults. So the funding part of this was a major part of what the president did yesterday. The other area where there's actually agreement between the NRA and the White House is in improving the records that go into the what's called the NICS database that is used for background checks for guns. Right now, roughly a third of the states don't really have many mental health records. These are people who have been adjudicated by a court mentally unfit. Those records are just not being put into the database. So it's very possible you would have someone in a state who a court has said is a danger to themselves and others, but has not been convicted of a felony, be able to go out and buy a gun. And there's pretty much universal agreement that that shouldn't be happening. And that's one of the other things that the president's moving forward with. But so, those are different situations. Those are situations in which the legal process has adjudicated someone as being unfit.
So before you go, and then we're going to talk to Paul Barrett from Bloomberg News, author of the book Glock. He's been at the gun show in Las Vegas over the past week, and we'll see how they reacted there to the idea of closing the gun show loophole. But you tell me if I'm seeing two areas of common ground between the president and the gun rights community, or whether this is an illusion. The president, in a statement yesterday, seemed to me to embrace the NRA's central proposal for an armed guard in every school that wants one. The president said he would seek funding to help schools add resource officers, I think was what he called them. Right. Is this a point of common ground now, briefly?
It is. And the difference is that it's Obama's just increasing funding for a program that was around since the 1990s for law enforcement in schools. He does think that's a good idea, despite the NRA ad being run against the president right now. There's also common ground here on part of the gun show loophole issue. The NRA is willing to discuss the idea of requiring background checks at gun shows. They don't want to deal with private sales or if I just sold you one of my guns. They don't want those, or if you gave your kid a gun or your uncle or your neighbor a gun. They don't want that to go through the background check system. But the NRA has said that if you want to have an ATF agent at gun shows, where a lot of these sales are happening, for those non-licensed dealers making sales to check the database, they're willing to discuss it. It's kind of been lost in this fight, right? Because the president is saying, I want universal, I want every single gun sale, no loopholes at all. The NRA is sort of, after many years, saying, okay, we can close the loophole somewhat, but not completely.
And I think that's the biggest prize the president is really aiming for, the universal background checks. May or may not get the assault weapons, may or may not get the extended capacity magazines. They're really going for the universal background checks because, honestly, they think that's really the biggest threat.
I think that's true. The question is whether in this environment in which the president has bundled together lots of things and made it sort of at least initially an all-or-nothing package, any kind of agreement like that is possible. And then you have to go back again and again to the fact that you have a Republican House right now that can't even pass its own speaker's bills. You're not in a situation in which that group of people is going to be very – interested in doing anything that's coming from the White House. I think there is common ground. I think if you were to back off and say, where could you get agreement, I think the NRA would probably support, some of the increased enforcement stuff, some of the increased funding stuff, especially for the schools. They've said they want to do that. They might be able to talk about the closing some of the gun show loophole, not completely. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. That's where we are right now. The president's definitely taking a different tack. He's trying to rally the country against the NRA right now.
Michael Shearer from Time Magazine, author of a new cover story, The Gunfighters. Michael Bloomberg, Joe Biden, Gabrielle Giffords, thank you so much.
Thank you, Brent.
And coming up next, Paul Barrett, author of Glock, reports on the big gun trade show in Las Vegas this week, and specifically on the reaction to the proposal for universal background checks that would close the gun show loophole and others. And I want to open up the phones right now as we bring Paul Barrett on for gun owners, gun rights advocates, NRA members to answer the question, does anyone still oppose universal background checks? Should the gun show loophole and other loopholes remain? This may be the most central proposal in the whole Obama package. Is there anybody out there who still opposes this? Universal background checks. Right now, 40%, they estimate, of gun purchases fall through the cracks. Universal background checks, can we at least get consensus on that? If you consider yourself a gun rights person, NRA member, gun owner, yes or no to at least that. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or post it to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show, and we'll take your calls with Paul Barrett, author of Glock, right after this.